Patsy Parton, and I'm coming to you from Vanderbilt Virtual School. We're located in Nashville, Tennessee. It's a beautiful spring day here in Tennessee. The trees are blooming and the flowers are blooming, and it's going to be in the 80s today. So we're loving it. And I hope it's a beautiful day where you are. This is a series that we call Hot Topics. And hot topics can be anything that's cutting edge, a little controversial, or just something that you want to know more about. We have lots of different series here in the virtual school, but this is one that you will have a lot of interaction. Joining me today is Kanayo Odo. He is from Nigeria. He is a law student here at Vanderbilt University. He's going to complete his education here at Vanderbilt in May and then return to Nigeria. He came to Howard University, where he got a BS in chemistry, and then he got a master's in chemical engineering, which will serve him well as he goes back to Nigeria to face some of the problems that are there. We're so glad to have him with us. Next week, we're having another video conference in the Hot Topics series called Into Africa and the AIDS Crisis. And we'll have Mark Dalhouse and some Vanderbilt students joining us. These students went to Uganda last summer and worked in the AIDS clinics, worked in surgery and different things, stayed a whole semester. And so they're coming to talk to us about the AIDS crisis. And something I want you to think about if you choose to join us is why that's happening in Africa, why the AIDS crisis has got such a hold on Africa as opposed to other countries. Is there something culturally, or what is there that's causing the dynamics of that to occur on that continent? So we hope you can join us again for that. Kanayo is, like I said, from Nigeria. He has an insightful way to see into problems of Africa that even you and I probably don't see, because he's part of the land. He's lived there. This is the blood of Africa flows through him. And so he has got some really interesting observations. Often we tend to think, oh, it's AIDS, or it's civil unrest, or it's poverty. And it is. It's all of those things. But what can we do? What can Africans do to help solve their problems? Couple of things I want to remind you, and I did never thought that this could have a downside till I heard him. Over 80% of the world's resources for gold, diamonds, oil are in Africa. How has that played into the governing, the civil unrest of Africa? And also, he'll give us just a little bit about the history of Africa and how the countries were put together. So we're so glad to have you with us.
Thank you. Again, hi. My name is Kanayo Odwe. I lived 20 years of my life, close to, in Nigeria before coming to the United States to pursue a higher education. the reason I came to the U.S. was to get a degree. And why did I leave Nigeria? Well, I left Nigeria in the late in 96, and the reason for this was there was civil unrest. We had a dictatorship, and the people were tired of the dictatorship. The university started to close down in reaction for their disgust at the dictatorship. And for that reason, I was given the opportunity to come to the United States to study, along with thousands of other Nigerians whose family had the means or the resources to do so. Now, the question is, why do we have the issues plaguing Africa today? That is the question. That is why we're here today to dialogue. There are three phases in the life of Africa: pre-colonial, colonial, and then post-colonial. I wouldn't bother with pre-colonial, and that has to do with the slave trade and all that. The colonial, I wouldn't bother with it so much. And then post-colonial. What happened in post-colonial Africa? Well, after World War II, a lot of African countries started to agitate for their independence. And in agitation, the colonial powers, England, France, I think Portugal, started to cede their powers. They left and said, okay, you know what, we'll give you independence. But before they left, England, France, perhaps Portugal, did something remarkable. A lot of African countries are actually artificial countries. You have actually 6-7 countries in one unit or one country. Nigeria, for example. Nigeria is a country made up of 6 major ethnic groups. So you actually have 6 countries in one country. Sierra Leone, the same thing. Liberia, the same thing. When the freed slaves from the United States went back, they constituted another ethnic group, or were viewed as such by the people in Liberia at the time, the indigenous Liberians. And then we look at Rwanda, right? We heard about the war in Rwanda where the Hutus, the Tutsis, those are 2 major ethnic groups in one country called Rwanda. And then let's not look too far back. Let's even look at Iraq. Same thing that happened in Iraq in the 1914. In 1914, when the British left, what did they do? They put the Sunnis and the Shia. Though not an ethnic group, they have separate religious beliefs, right? And now, what do you have? You now see what's going on in Iraq, right? Killings, bombings, people killing each other because they are different. They are different people. I want you to imagine this. You think about England. Or let's think about the United States. Can you imagine what will happen if the US merged with Mexico and Canada as one country? What will happen? Will they ever thrive or progress? Most of the time will be spent fighting each other. So, post-colonial Africa had its ill. It had its negative effect on Africa. And the question is, I mean, why don't they just break up? I mean, okay, if you can't get along with yourselves, just split into your different ethnic groups. But there's a catch. A lot of African countries are blessed with natural resources. Oil, gold, diamond, you name it. Those countries are blessed. So what happens is, certain ethnic groups don't have the kind of resources the other ethnic groups have. So when a country, an African country, wants to split, an ethnic group won't want to split because it relies on the natural resources of the other areas of that country. Now, in order to hold a country together, for it not to split, what happens? You now have a dictator that emerges, right? Now, dictatorship usually is the solution for holding African countries together. Now, when you have the dictators, a natural birth of dictatorship, a child of dictatorship, is corruption. And once you have a dictator, it slowly degenerates into corruption. I mean, you would have heard Iraq, what happened when the US forces invaded Iraq. Saddam's men walked into the banks, the reserve, and just took out money as they wished. And this is what happens in every dictatorship. Now, when you have a dictatorship for, say, 10, 15 years, corruption starts to thrive. Before you know it, the people, you have a culture of corruption. And anywhere there is injustice, I mean, it has been proved time and time again, up until the works of the great Greek philosopher Socrates, who said, when you have injustice, there is bound to be strife. You will never have a successful nation anytime there is injustice. And that is what has plagued, or is plaguing, Africa today. Hopefully, there's a push towards change with democracy, but it will take time. Now, you would have heard, and you should know, that some of the issues in Africa include genocide, poor government structure, healthcare issues, epidemics, and economic structure. I could delve into those separate issues, but I wouldn't. I will, in the course of our dialogue, you will ask me questions, but I will push and say, I'll be bold enough to say that the main issue plaguing Africans today is corruption. There is a fellow in Nigeria who helps, he now works with the UN, or he should be working with the UN in trying to stop corruption in African countries. To everyone's shocking amazement, he says, in his own words, Africa loses $140 billion every year to corruption. A lot of the leaders or rulers loot their countries and then send their money overseas. And then anytime they fall sick, they don't spend time trying to develop their nations or their systems. They fly out to get healthcare. When they want to go on holidays, they want to take in a clean breath of fresh air, they fly out to the West. No one, or rather, no ruler at this point, other than Julius Nyerere of Tanzania in the 80s, took time to develop their nation. Some have tried, but again, a lot of times in Africa, we've had dictatorships. What happens when you come in through a bloody coup, you leave through a bloody coup. A lot of dictators come and they come in with a coup and they're ousted with a coup. So, and we've had situations in Nigeria where we had a very good leader at the time. He was a dictator by the name of Buhari. He tried to clean Nigeria of corruption, but he didn't last too long. Another dictator came in and took him out. So this is the issue. This is what has plagued Nigeria. Because of corruption, greed, you have leaders who come and they take a side and loot their country of their natural resources. And then what happens? At a point, the people say, enough is enough. And then what happens? You have genocide. The economic infrastructure breaks down. We also know that healthcare is a serious issue in Nigeria. The question is, I mean, what is there in healthcare, right? You build your hospitals, you put your doctors in there. But there's a problem. Africa is in the tropics. It's a tropical region. And like most tropics, you have the issue of malaria, typhoid, cholera, waterborne diseases, airborne diseases. So even if you have this nice hospital or set of nice doctors, those doctors won't focus on the real, or rather serious diseases like diabetes, cancer, fractures of the bones in times of accidents, because they will have a swarm of other cases like malaria patients or people afflicted with typhoid. So the system, the healthcare system, can't sustain itself. So what can we do to solve this problem? In my view, we have to go back and study other nations that have done, or other nations that tackled the problems. Up until the late 1800s in the United States, they had diseases like malaria, cholera, typhoid. They had these tropical diseases in the southern part of the United States. They solved the issue or eradicated most of these problems through environmental engineering. So the issue now will be an engineering issue, not so much a medical issue. We have to deal with those diseases or those issues, and then we can now deal with the serious issues. And I can hear some people saying, well, if it's that easy, why can't they do it? Well, it still boils down to corruption. And the unfortunate incident or the unfortunate characteristic of African nations is a lot of African nations have not been, or rather have not had visionary leaders, people who can look far into the future and say, you know, this is the path we must take. So this is the issue. Poor leadership because of corruption. As long as corruption remains in the air, we will not be able to address some of these serious issues. Corruption breeds strife. And an example of this, like I previously stated, will be if you had in a class students, say the students in the front row, right? Say they make the best students in the class. And it progressively degenerates from there. In other words, those at the back are not as bright as those at the front. Now, this is just an example now. And let us say the teacher in class, after each exam, gives the best grades to those who are not the brightest. What will happen? At the point in time, all of you in the class will lead a revolt. Because you will say, enough is enough. I've worked so hard. The professor is giving the better grades to people who are not even doing anything. And the class collapses. You have the strife, which is common. And that's what you're seeing in a lot of African countries today. There's also the notion, too, I also hear, you know, people think Africa is one big it's one big country. Africa is not a country, but it's a continent. So it has a lot of countries within the continent.
It's the second largest continent, right?
Yes, it's the second largest continent in the world. So that being said, I'm open to questions.
Great. Okay, let's start with North Carolina School of Science and Math in Durham for a couple of questions. You have a couple of questions?
Of the 30 million people with AIDS and HIV, how many are children?
Well, I haven't run through the statistics to know, you know, how many are children or how many are not, but I do know that regardless of whether they are children or not, you know, it's a big issue plaguing certain regions, most especially in Africa, which will be the southern part of Africa and the eastern part of Africa.
Is there a reason that it has been in the south and the east rather than north and west?
I don't know. Well, I know in the northern part of Africa, you know, it's very, the issue of AIDS is so, it's quite minuscule. And I think it has to do with the cultural and the religious beliefs. Mm-hmm. So in northern Africa, there are a lot of Muslims. It's more, you know, conservative lifestyle. Mm-hmm. I think in southern Africa, they may not be as conservative. They may not be as conservative. And, you know, history tells us that the books have told us that the disease started, the virus may have started from southern Africa, eastern Africa, thereabouts.
About 85, 86.
Yes, about 85. So maybe that may account for why the disease has spread more so in those areas than the other areas.
Okay, thank you. Another question, North Carolina School of Science.
Do you think if the economy in Africa became more stable, it would slowly fix the rest of the problems, or do you think they're all equally interdependent?
The economy will never become strong as long as you have corruption. So the first key issue to tackle will be corruption. And I think the UN is trying. They have a convention against corruption now. There's now the push towards addressing the issue of corruption by African leaders who loot or steal from their government or their nations.
She's asking, though, if the corruption got fixed, do you think the other things, like AIDS and civil unrest and things like that, would take care of themselves?
Yes, once you deal with the corruption, every other thing falls in place. I mean, they know what the problems are. They know what the problems are. I mean, they read books. Some of them are literate. Some of them are educated. they know what the problems are, but they spend more time trying to connive and trying to, some of them, not all of them, they are very, very good and great leaders too, who are trying to fight the system of what is going on. But the stench of corruption is still very strong. So if you deal with the corruption, I think every other thing falls in place, right? Because you start to award or reward good behavior. You start to reward excellence. You start to reward people who are doing well. Now, a lot of African nations, because the greatest manifestation of corruption we see in Africa today is in the electoral process, right? When you have election, a lot of the thugs who work for some of those crooked leaders steal the votes. They don't let the votes, they don't want the votes counted. That's the greatest manifestation of corruption. So what happens when you have the people saying, you know, this is the leader we want. This is the leader, the good leader. This is the leader who can help our country. The few corrupt ones steal the votes and they put the criminal there or a thug there, the person they want, who they know is corrupt. And what happens? You now have that trend, the evil trend, and it keeps happening over and over and over again. So corruption, when I say corruption, I'm just not saying corruption about, you know, concerning stealing not the resources from the state or from the countries. I'm also talking about corruption that goes towards stifling democracy in its pure form. So once we can deal with those two forms of corruption, one being electoral fraud and the other being looting the government of his
stealing money
pretty much, then we'll start to see Africa progress. So it's those are the issues now. So that's why corruption is, because as long as people don't have their say, you know, you'll never produce the best. You'll not have the leader who will fight for the people.
Thank you. Okay, now we're going to Sandberg Middle School in Golden Valley, Minnesota for a couple of questions.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so I have a question about what do you think Africa would be like today if there wasn't a colonial input?
Wow. Wow.
I thought about that. I mean, a lot of ifs, a lot of speculations. But I think it's when you say colonial input, I like the question. It gets me thinking. But there are two. Colonialism brought its good aspect. It brought a good side. So like everything, you right, you have the good and you have the bad. Colonialism brought something good to Africa. Like, you know, in ancient civilizations like Rome, when Rome went conquered other nations, they brought with them education, they brought with them knowledge. And the education, the knowledge helped those nations thrive or become strong. So without colonialization or colonialism, I just don't know. It's hard to say what Africa will be today. It's really hard. I can't give a definite question because it has its good and has its bad. I hope I satisfied your
Thank answer. You. All right, Sandberg Middle School, another question?
Just a second.
How do the dictators keep hold of their power in Africa?
Wow.
One word, gaunt.
Wow.
Guns and also a lot of corrupt companies, multinational companies from the West have helped, you know,
keep them in power
by supplying them arms, giving them money to predate upon their people. So a lot of Western multinational companies have played their own role as what is going on in Sudan today. Though not the West, China, there are accusations now in the problems in Sudan that China is fueling some of the crisis in Sudan by taking sides or ignoring what is going on in Sudan. So that's how they've been able to hold on to power.
Thank you. Okay, Upton Middle School in St. Joseph, Michigan. We're ready for a couple of questions from you.
Okay, thank you. We have a couple. Do you know how many countries are committing genocide? And do you think the less countries that are committing genocide, the more tourism and the visitation?
Can you go? I didn't get that question.
He wants to know how many countries mm-hmm. that currently have genocide going right. on in them, areas in Africa, and that if there were not the genocide, don't you think there'd be more tourism? Is that what you're saying? More communication yeah. with those countries?
As at today, the only country I can think of committing genocide is, according to the definition of genocide, because genocide does have a definition, a legal definition, right? So when you talk of genocide, you're talking about killing a group of people. It has its legal definitions. Now, the only country I can think of committing genocide in Africa today will be Sudan. A couple of years back,
that's the Darfur region.
Yeah, the Darfur region in Sudan. A couple of years back, we had
Rwanda.
We had Liberia. Mm-hmm. We had Syria alone. So those were the countries. And when I say a couple of years back, we're saying 6-7 years ago. Those are the countries. Now, if they didn't have genocide, you're right, it would have increased maybe some kind of tourism, and people would have more interested in associating with such regions.
Good question. All right, another question up in middle school.
Okay, we have another one.
Do you think the movie Blood Diamond is accurate?
I haven't yet seen it, but I hear it has a lot of parallels to what happened in real life. I wish I'd seen it.
You have to see it before you go back.
Yeah. I probably will try to see it. I've been too busy with schoolwork, so.
He's trying to finish up law school.
Well, maybe Alex can answer your question.
Okay.
Can I ask one more?
Of course.
All right, hold on. We've got one more.
Alex?
Alex.
I had to stand up. If you could bring one item back that would help your economy, what would it be?
Wow.
I love that question.
We've got some very intelligent students today.
If I could bring one item from here
to Nigeria
to help Nigeria, what would I would think education. Mm-hmm. I would think education, because education covers a lot. It frees the mind of people. It develops people's minds. It develops thinking, way of life. It makes people know their rights. It makes people assert their rights. It makes people stand for their rights and take what belongs to them. So I will think education will be the one thing that I'll take, and I hope to take when I go back to Nigeria. Thank you for that nice question.
Great answer. Great question. Great answer. And we'll come back to you, Upton. We're going to have plenty of time for questions since there's just three of you in this session. We're going next to North Carolina School of Science and Math for a couple of more questions.
The host talked about how you're going to law school and you're going to return to your home country, but what are you personally going to try to do once you get there to help your country?
Well, it goes back to the previous question that I just heard. I'm going to raise awareness, try and educate the masses, try and let people know that they have rights. They must demand their rights from their people in power. I will try and educate the people, try and push for legislation, try and let people know that everyone has a right or a stake in their countries, including Nigeria. And the people who they put to govern them must be accountable to the people. So those are things I hope to take back. Another thing, too, I must mention is that the structure, the basis for which a lot of African countries function, right, is poor. I would be bold to say that. I mean, people will question and say, who am I to make such an assertive statement? But I think, and I'm bold enough, and I would say the structure on which a lot of African countries run is poor. What do I mean? I mean the constitution. The constitution of a lot of countries in Africa are not well thought of. You know, they're not well thought out. Like here, you had in the United States, the founding fathers, a lot of them were very, very educated. They were bright. They were visionaries. They could see way into the future and they projected it. And not only could they see way into the future, they did a lot of study. They studied works of great French philosophers. I don't know, some of you may be aware, Montesquieu was one of the greatest celebrated philosophers in the drafting of the United States Constitution. These founding fathers in the United States thought through everything. Now, a lot of African countries just get a draft. You know, they get a draft, they put the draft together in maybe a year, right? And they put it and they take it. But you need careful deliberation. You need it thought out. And I think because of the way Africa is, a lot of African countries, I don't know if I mentioned this earlier, a lot of African countries are actually 6-7 countries in one, right? Like in Nigeria, right? We have like 7 major ethnic groups. You have the Igbos, the Yorubas, the Hausas, the South people, they have their own language. So you have actually 6 different countries in one unit. Now, I want you to imagine a scenario like where you have England, France, Germany as a country. It will never function well. So we have 2 solutions. Either the African countries come together and say, you know what, let us break apart peacefully. Or we say to ourselves, let us come together and see how we can work together as one great nation. And I choose the latter. I want, in a case like Nigeria, you come together and you put a structure together that works. And I think the best structure to make African countries, at least some of them, a lot of them, West Africa, even East Africa, a lot of African countries, the best structure to work on will be a federal structure. Because with federal structures, you have more smaller units, states, smaller states. And when you have small states, they now have to rely on each other. You now decrease the power of the executive branch. Because what happens with a lot of countries, and it's almost like a dictatorship, right? They give a lot of power to the presidency. And too much power will inevitably lead to corruption. So you reduce the powers at the executive branch, have a federal structure, as opposed to a parliament. Now, with a parliament, what happens is that you have regions. Regions are like big chunks of areas. So you can have like the Igbo region, the Yoruba region, and the Hausa region. And the parliamentary system is what is practiced now in Canada. And some people may say, well, you know, in Canada, it's working, but it's not really working. I don't know. Some of you maybe keep up with current affairs where the people of Quebec, the French-speaking part of Canada, are trying to break away from Canada. As a matter of fact, up recently, the current prime minister acknowledged Quebec as a separate nation within the nation of Canada. So if we want to function well as a group, a lot of African countries have to come together, sit down at the drawing table, study systems, know which system works well for us. And I think because of the multi-ethnicity within the nations, right, the best system to work or that will work for a lot of African nations will be the federal structure. Because when you have smaller units, you know, each unit depends on the other, as opposed to regions, because regions a lot of times become so self-confident, they become so courageous, and they say, you know what, we're tired of you guys, and then they try to break up, and what happens? You have a war, you just have that endless cycle. So I think that will be the solution to the problem.
Thank you. Another question, North Carolina School of Science and Math.
In what ways has the government tried to maintain peace through the midst of like harsh crises such as the HIV, AIDS epidemic, and like in poverty struggles in the nation?
With regard to AIDS, the first question, or the first part of the question, they've tried, there's awareness, at least I know for Nigeria and a lot of West Africa, even East African countries too, they try to telecast, broadcast, there's a cultural awareness. The second part of the question concerning poverty, as long as there's corruption, as long as corruption remains a norm, or there is no anti-corruption effort, sincere anti-corruption effort, I just don't know how the cycle of poverty can be broken.
Okay, thank you. All right, Sandberg Middle School in Golden Valley, Minnesota, we're coming to you for a couple of questions.
Yeah, my question is, if people could set aside their differences, do you think they could overthrow a dictator? And what kind of army would the dictator have to protect himself if that were to happen?
Losses. Then corruption rears its ugly head again, in that when you have a dictator, right, he will be more than likely from a particular region. So let me use the U.S. for example. Although there's no dictatorship here. Let's say you have a dictator from California, right? And he wants to take control or control the U.S. What he will do is, corruption comes in, like most dictatorships. He tries to make a lot of money. He now gives some people money. Those people now give some little money to the people around. Maybe they can take like one or two other regions. And arm them. Arm them strongly. So when those people, if the whole U.S. wants to stage an uprising, they quash them because of the guns and the control they have. I think in Nigeria is a classic case like that addresses the question. In Nigeria in 1996, I think, they had a dictator who was ousted, or was it 1995? Yeah, 1995, who was ousted because the people said, you know what, enough is enough. You know, everything now sort of collapsed and, you know, he died. He died in office. There are still speculations as to what killed him. But it was not an uprising in the traditional sense, you see. So it wasn't like everybody got together, staged an uprising. He sort of died in office in mysterious circumstances, you know. So that's how that issue was addressed, at least.
Thank you. All right, another question, Sandberg Middle School.
I know there's a lot of problems with the education from lack of funds and lack of teachers.
Right.
So I was wondering, what do you think are some of the challenges the education system faces and what can be done to help?
Well, the system of education has, in my view, we have a huge population crisis. I know in Nigeria we have, you know, so the population is so high that sometimes the infrastructure may not be enough to contain the population of people who need to be in school. That's one aspect. However, that's no excuse. Again, it still comes down to corruption. The people have to be, the corruption and leadership, right? And when you have leaders who are visionary, people who know there's a problem and who choose to address that problem, then you can address the issue. They have to think hard as to how to address the issue. The natural resources are there, the money is there, and we have to see the importance of education. But as long as you don't have the right visionary leader, we'll still have the same problem, because when you have people, corruption at the voting booth, in most regions that practice democracy, what happens? You put a leader there who is corrupt, who will want to feed into the corruption of the people who put him into office. So a lot of things still boil down to corruption and people not asserting their rights.
I have a question before we go on to another school. If you have all this huge amount of natural resources, over 80%,
right,
but it's not trickling down educationally wise to you said there's probably not a middle class like
right.
in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
It's either rich
or poor.
How can you get the hearts of the rich to turn to the poor to help them up by offering them jobs, by letting some of the resources trickle down for education. I was just thinking, in Nigeria, it's an oil-rich country.
Right.
So for every barrel of oil that you gather, you know, that you drill from the ground, why not add 2 or 3 cents that would go to education?
It's very interesting that you mentioned that. Yesterday I was reading the news, the Nigerian news that is, and they actually have a fund for the very thing you mentioned.
Well, good. They should.
It's called the Petroleum Trust Development Fund to take care of the very issues you just mentioned. It was a brilliant idea. But this is the
corruption
twist.
Again?
Corruption again. They just indicted the president and the vice president.
For taking the money.
For taking the money.
Because I...
Or abusing the trust of the people.
Because I'm a believer that to raise up students like this in Africa, you know, to get their hearts, to get the hearts and minds of children when they're young enough, you know, could that change a country? I know it can't do it overnight. But you're growing citizens that would be able to be self-governing.
I must say something. It can't change overnight because I was, in my spare time, I've taken a fascination to Asia, Japan especially.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in Japan, in 50 years, in less than 50 years, they turned everything around. They became mm-hmm. a world power in less than 50 years. How? Education and embracing change, great change. Telling the people to accept reason, Western science,
mm-hmm.
and they did that, and they became a world power by the early 1900s.
And the work ethic is unbelievable.
Yeah, but the work ethic still comes with,
right?
You know, that embracing, questioning
mm-hmm.
the leaders. You still need the visionary leaders, and you still have to wipe out that the element of corruption. Japan did it in 50 years.
Mm-hmm. World War II.
Even before World War II.
Okay.
Before they became a world power.
Okay.
By World War II,
mm-hmm.
there was a period they called the Meiji Restoration,
mm-hmm.
where I think it was in the 1850s or 1857, in less than 40 years. By 1890 or 1898, they became so powerful. They controlled, by 1911, they had already started controlling most of Asia and had defeated Russia in war.
Well, let's go back for some more questions. Do we have a final question from Upton Middle School, St. Joseph, Michigan? Or a couple of questions. Let's have a couple of questions.
Yes, we do. I was wondering how other continents and countries like the United States government are trying to help end corruption in these African countries.
The U.S. took a very nice... In conjunction with the UN, took a very bold step and very nice step. I think about 4 years ago, there's a UN Convention Against Corruption, right? So that's a bold first step. Second, now what the foreign nations are doing, the Western nations are doing is, if you have a corrupt government, a corrupt leader who steals money from his country and takes that money and sends it, because what they normally do is that they steal the money and put it in foreign bank accounts. So what the US and England and some other Western nations are doing is, if they do that, once the leaders steal the money and put it in their accounts, they alert the new government and say, hey, you know what? The former regime has X amount of money in our bank. They probably stole it. Another thing they do, I think they also freeze the money as well. So the people who steal it don't have access to the money. So there you go. That's the step they have taken.
So that's the step of international law. Right?
Yes, it's more of a step of international law.
Okay, Upton Middle School, do you have another question? Bye, Golden Valley.
What kind of technology do you have in Nigeria?
Technology spans from so much. Agricultural technology, are you saying? Electrical technology, what kind of...
Well, the rich, you said, have satellite dishes.
Yeah, they have everything. If you can afford it, you can get anything you want. You know,
but there's just such a chasm between...
Yes, between the rich and the poor. So you have everything, satellite... I mean, you'll be so shocked.
I would be shocked.
If you go to Nigeria, everything, every music here, every news in the US or in England, the Nigerian knows. Because, you know, they have access to the satellite dish. They have access to everything, cars, internet, everything. But the problem is how many people get their hands on it?
Yeah. Okay, good question. Another question. Upton.
We have one more
question. What effect does Nigeria have on the economy and government of Africa?
Wow. And it's an interior country.
Yes, Nigeria is, it's almost, they call it, well, it's about, it's not the central, but it's close to the central part of Africa. It's Western Africa. It's supposed to be the leading country. I think at this point, because of the leaders we've had, the dictators we had, it hasn't lived up to the challenges and that faces it. But I think in the years to come, it can actually lead that continent. It can be a pace setter or a trend setter for the region.
Great. Thank you very much. Okay, North Carolina School of Science and Math, do you have a couple of questions?
Hi, my name is Ogechin Zoe, and my parents are Nigerian immigrants, and I'm just wondering what people like myself can do for Nigeria, because like, I'm specifically interested in like healthcare systems in Nigeria and other African countries, and so what can we do from the outside to help? Thank you.
What you can, well, it's will be one of awareness, education, you know. Let people know and let people hear what is going on. At the end of the day, we Nigerians, or Africans for that matter, will be responsible for our own future. It's not enough for the West or for anybody to tell us or to keep giving us handouts. We have to take responsibility as Africans and as people to advance our various countries. It's going to have to boil down to that, because you can talk, I gave an example earlier on of, you know, a child who is a truant, a child who is not serious with his schoolwork. You know, you can have a parent may keep trying to make excuses for the child. Well, you know, at one point he'll be okay, give him handouts, make excuses. Or the parent can say, you have to take responsibilities for what your future will be. So at a point, we're going to have to, Nigerians, Africans, will have to take that responsibility. We have educated people. I mean, they are remarkable surgeons. My cousin is a surgeon for Bethesda Naval Hospital. He's schooled at Emory. And there are numerous Nigerians who are medical doctors, trained surgeons, engineers. I mean, people that have astonishing credentials. So it's going to remain for Africans in Africa and here as well to say, you know what, enough is enough, and we're going to take responsibility for making our country a great nation. And to do that, one of the very aspects or facets we must address is corruption and implementation of strong educational system.
Thank you. Okay, North Carolina, do you have another question?
What do you think the responsibility of the U.S. government, she talked a little bit about the individual, but what do you think the responsibility of the government of developed nations is in helping advance Nigerian education and trying to eradicate Nigerian poverty?
Now, responsibility, right? That's what I said,
responsibility. You know, kind of, we're our brother's keeper.
Yeah, well, as far as that, exactly, as far as that goes, you know, as being a brother's keeper, you know, that's one facet. Two, we're all part of a great human society, so we must take interest in what the others do. You know, I think it was Martin Luther King who said, whatever affects a few affects the whole. Mm-hmm. A rich man will never be what a rich man ought to be if a poor man is not what he ought to be. You can never be good if you do not eradicate bad. You can never be what you ought to be if I'm not what I ought to be. So from that perspective, from that philosophy, the U.S. has an interest in making sure Africa develops. But there's a trend now in the world, and they call it the information age. The internet, Google, so there's information out there. So what I think the U.S. to do, if we were to ask for help, if they asked us, say, you know, what do you think we should do in terms of education? I would say try and make the channels of the internet cheaper and more accessible for the people, for the average people in Nigeria. And they are doing that as a matter of fact, because I know there's a push now to make the laptop for the average people in Africa. A friend of mine who is an engineer in Nigeria came here, and they're trying to push for laptops that will cost, I think, $100 or less than $100. So if you can have that, that's one field or one element of it. If you can have that now in Africa, you can now start pushing for internet costs, reducing internet costs, pushing for the information age. So I think from that perspective, that will be a way to go.
Okay. Well, I hate to even bring this to a close. It's been so fascinating.
Can we ask one last question?
One last one from Sandberg.
Oh, absolutely. I thought your students left.
The students did, but we have a student teacher, and he wanted to ask a question.
Oh, great.
We've got a student teacher and an intern here.
Okay, great.
You can have two questions, Golden Valley.
Great.
I read Ken Wiwa Jr.'s book, In the Shadow of a Saint, about his father. They're from Nigeria, and I was wondering, how can the rest of the world see that as a model of how to, because it's a story about, you know, Nigeria and environmentalism and actions against those multinational corporations. How can you, since you're going to be going back there, how can you use that to galvanize support and activism?
You raise a very interesting point, but I think international law is moving. The whole issue of globalization, international law is now moving towards a center, right? So with what I've learned now, what we can do, a lot of us can do, is sue a lot of the multinational companies in the U.S. courts. So what Sarah Wiwa did was, they actually sued some of the multinational companies in U.S. courts, and I think they did get awards or are still in the courts, and the multinational companies are really scared. Another issue that is going on now is the bullying of the Nigerian citizens, of people in Nigeria. What is now happening is, I think, and people like me, I think it's things we have to push, is where if we know our judicial system cannot give us the justice we need, the U.S. courts or foreign courts will be able to hear our cases. So there's a case going on now, a human rights case, against the former military ruler in Nigeria in 99, or just before 99, Abubakar, where he abused or violated the civil rights of some Nigerians. So they are now suing him in the U.S. courts, and the case is still hot. So he can't come to the U.S. now. So God forbid he falls sick, he dare not come to the U.S. And that's the trend. And I think that if at all, if the U.S. wants to help us, or the foreign nations want to contribute to our advancement or development, the way to go about it, instead of giving us handouts, will be to open their courts to us, to help trade relationships so we can trade with them. So that's a way I think we can address the issue you just raised. And then two, the people have to now come and know their rights. You know, what happens, a lot of people, those areas that you violate the civil rights of the people, like environmental disasters, the people's lands that are destroyed are usually not too educated, right? So they see their rivers are destroyed. They don't even know what law is or what basic human rights are to start with. And who do they turn to? They don't know who to turn to. So it is now left for people like us, and then for people like you, to work in concert with us when we go back and say, look, this is what's going on here. And then you now push for awareness in the U.S. or in the world, and we'll be able to sue those people. The government, the African government that takes part, conspires with the multinational companies that do those things. So that will be a way to go. And that's the way the world is moving. And I'll be very, very happy if that can happen.
Did you have another question?
No, I'm okay.
Oh, I do, actually. I'm wondering, I think that the average U.S. citizen has very little awareness of what's going on in Africa and also of African history. So I wonder, as educators, if you have maybe recommendations for two or three topics we might want to touch on with, say, middle school students, with U.S. middle school students to build awareness of African history or current social conditions, health crisis, anything.
I think I would say if they can go towards genocide, you know, type in genocide in Google or government. But rather than talk about Africa, I would say they should pick countries, because Africa is a bit, you know, it's a continent with so close to 50 countries or more. I don't know, I because sometimes they try to split. But you choose a country. The best way to go, if I had advice, would say, you know, choose a part of West Africa, choose a country in West Africa. Choose a country in East Africa, choose a country in Central Africa, choose a country in South Africa, and Googling, you know, something. But I must tell you that, in all fairness, all is not bad in Africa. There's a trend, there's a push. When you go there, because I know when I was in Nigeria, I actually interned in ExxonMobil in 2004, my first year here at law school. And I met a lot of foreigners, and they vowed they would never leave Nigeria. They loved it there. They had everything they wanted. They loved it there, and they said they will never leave. I mean, these are personal experiences. So it's not, if it was that bad, it wouldn't be, that wouldn't have been the case. I actually met foreigners from the West who said they will never leave Nigeria. So it's a question of now building on that, making it, reducing the conflict, the tension, improving the middle class, developing a strong middle class. Once we can do that, you know, we're not asking for 100%, we're just asking for as close to it, ideal. Moving towards the ideal is what we're asking for.
Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us this morning, and for all of the students. I think you're going to, I want you to remember his name, Kanayo Odo,
yeah,
from Nigeria, because I think you'll probably hear of him in the future. And I think he's got a vision for Nigeria to be a trendsetter or a pace setter for the African continent. And I thank you so much, Upton Middle School in St. Joseph and North Carolina School of Science and Math there in Durham, and Sandberg Middle School in Golden Valley, Minnesota, for joining us, because this has been a great dialogue. You have asked amazing questions, very insightful questions. I'm feeling really good about turning our stuff over to students that are coming up. They're very well educated, and we thank you. Remember, next Thursday, that we are having a video conference on another African topic, on Into Africa and the AIDS crisis. So hope you can join us then. Bye-bye.
Thank you.